question like this to begin with. How far back can you remember? What's the earliest recollection you have of our area?
Well, I don't know that when I tell how far back that people don't believe me.
Well, we'll believe you.
My earliest recollection is I was certainly under 3 years old. I can fix the time because my grandfather, the surgical work on my head, and he died. I don't remember him at all, but he was living at that time and I speak of, and he died about a year later, and I must have been then not over 3 years old, and I was born in 75, and with my older brother, we were down in the pasture building sod houses, and my brother had an old axe, and he was cutting sods, and when I wanted a sod, I went right in after it, regardless of the axe, and so he hit me right on top of the head to the corner of this old axe. And of course that scalp wound, it bled like a stuck pig, and we were some little distance from the house, and he got me up there. I remember trying to amuse me by telling me the quails were chasing us, and we weren't amused
at all.
And we got up the house, and he says, "Now you wash your blood off in the horse trough and put your cap on. We'll go in, won't say anything about this." And so I washed my head off as well as I could, and I had a little round velvet cap. I put that on my head and walked into the house, the blood running down my face. And that's the last I remember about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember my mother exclaiming something when I came in.
In the late 1800s, what did they have by way of medical facilities in the area? Anything?
Well, my grandfather was the first doctor here, and well, he was a mile away, but they got him, I guess, right away.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just an old-fashioned doctor. I don't even know what his training was, but I think he'd graduated from a medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to drive around the country in a high-wheeled gig, just one little seat between the two high wheels, you know. So he was up above the horse, and that gig was around the farm for years, and finally ended up its career as a trailer for a canoe.
Imagine that. Yeah. Had a varied career.
Yes.
Quite a varied career. What, who do you think was, do you remember as being the most, had the most effect on you as a young man? Did you say it was your grandfather? Or?
No, my mother, certainly. My mother was a a great reader. She was interested in everything, especially in botany. And she used to have about an old Gray's manual, and she'd identify plants for me, and sort of started me on my downward career.
Started you down the road, huh?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And would you say her life was particularly hard in those days? The women had it pretty rough.
Oh yes, it was hard. But they all took it as a matter of course. Now I remember her washing the wool from her own sheep, washing it and carding it and spinning it into yarn, and then knitting it into underclothes for us.
Mm-hmm.
And she knit all of her stockings and mittens and everything like that. She was never sat down the evening without her knitting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live in those days?
We lived a mile over on the Shin Pond Road.
Mm-hmm. And what were you living in?
The farmhouse there. The house is still there. The barn that was built in my time has fallen down and gone now. And the farm is not operated at all. It's just growing strawberries.
Did you, it was a working farm, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
And what were your duties when you were a young boy?
Oh, of course, I began carrying in the wood. I can hardly remember when I didn't bring in all the wood for the stove in the house. And then, of course, as I got older, they had the barn chores and 10, 12 cows.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, for some reason I wasn't able to learn to milk. And so I didn't get into the milking habit until I'd gotten a little older than they usually did. But my brother, always older brother, he was a hunter. And he'd always blame him because he couldn't get away on Saturdays for hunting because I couldn't milk.
He was stuck home with a job.
So he had to stay home on, and so to do the milking. But I had finally to come to it, and sometimes I'd have all the chores, all the take care of the calves and the milk the cows.
You must remember
the pigs.
You must remember very well when electricity came to the area.
Oh yes, we didn't have electricity on the farm until just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they got the cooperative electric, government sponsored, and we didn't put in then.
Must have been a minor miracle in your life, getting electricity into a house. Must have changed your whole way of living.
And no, I never had electricity until I went to college.
Is that right?
Yes.
You did all your reading by candlelight?
Lamplight.
Lamplight?
Yes. Yeah. Everyone did. They they got electricity in the village here. You see, we were quite away from any power line.
Mm-hmm.
And the mill put in an electric plant here, the sawmill. And they had electricity in the village and street lights.
What did you do for excitement when you were young?
Do what?
What did you do for excitement? What was your fun?
Well, we always had ball teams, and but we usually went fishing or into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go into lumber camps in the winter, and go where we began to camp, you know, on Shin Pond before anyone else had thought it was very well. They looked on Shin Pond as kind of a scum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cross the bridge, you of course know this, you cross the bridge on a viaduct, and then below that is they call the thoroughfare. It isn't a thoroughfare, but it's serves the purpose of one. And that was all dry kai. All these lakes, when they were dammed for the water for driving, the shores were flooded and the trees killed, and they fell over into water.
Mm-hmm.
So the shores around most all the lakes, and especially this thoroughfare, was all filled with this dry kai.
Mm-hmm.
And just a channel down through the middle, and that was all full of lily pads. So Shin Pond didn't look like a very much of a summer resort, but it's really a beautiful lake, and it's become very popular.
Mm. How did you get started on your career? I mean, you went away to college. Where did you go?
Well, I went to Orono and took agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But in my senior year, I had a little course in bacteriology, and just enough to give me some idea of what it amounted to. And so I worked in the woods a winter, and then got together enough money to go to University of Wisconsin, and I had a year there in bacteriology and botany.
Can you trace this back to you, the effect that your mother had on you?
I beg your pardon?
You would trace this back to the effect that your mother had on you.
Well, interest in biology in general, geology, any natural science.
Mm-hmm. Could you give me some idea of how the Lumbermen's Museum came into being?
Well, of course you have to go back to the pre-revolutionary days. Then they cut pine along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Saco and the Androscoggin and Kennebec and the lower Penobscot. And that was loaded right into the ships. Right, they hauled it right to the shore and floated it out and loaded it into ships. And it was mostly the big business was masts.
Mm-hmm.
mass mm-hmm. number. Pine that would be measured a diameter of a foot at 100 feet in mm-hmm. height. And they cut pine and spruce for that. And then a good deal of lumber shipped, they called ton lumber, that was hewn, squared up, and shipped in the sailing ships.
Mm-hmm. What was that destined for? What was it going to be used?
Sawed.
Mm-hmm.
And shipped it to England and on the continent,
mm-hmm.
and sawed. At first in the up in the saw pit by hand, and in England they stuck to the pit when after they'd gotten this power mills in the on the continent
mm-hmm.
and in Holland and France and so on. And but the English are so conservative, they stuck to the saw pit. And when they tried to, when they tried to bring in a mill from Holland, the sawyers got together and I think they burned it, got rid of it anyway. And the lumber shipped to England was all hewn,
mm-hmm.
so the it was shipped by the volume, not the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got the ton lumber. It was shipped by the ton, but the nautical ton was a log 40 feet square, 40 feet long, and 12 inches square.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a ton, and that spelled T-U-N originally, because it the capacity of the ships in the very early days were the how many of these earthenware jugs that they shipped wine in. They called them tons.
I see.
T-U-N's. And so a ship that was rated at 25 tons would hold 25 of these standardized jugs.
Uh-huh.
And that was carried over, and they finally, it became a nautical ton.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, changed the name to change the spelling to T-O-N.
Hmm.
And but then they, that lumber was cut off along the coast. Then they began to move up the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they cut pine up along the Piscataquis and the Mattawamkeag and the Penobscot, the lower Penobscot. And about 1820, they got up this far.
Mm-hmm.
The first mill, first settler here was a man named Fish. He came here as a representative of Amos Paddin, a Bangor landowner, lumberman, who had bought this town, four and the six.
Mm-hmm.
He bought it from the state of Massachusetts, and he engaged Paddin to come up here and sell this town off.
Meaning Fish?
Divided, yes. Divided into lots. And
mm-hmm.
he and a man named Kellogg. Now, Kellogg was interested in lumber, and they began to cut pine all this region, and that was driven down the Mattawamkeag and to into the Penobscot to Bangor.
Mm-hmm.
In my early days, our pasture was here and there, a big pine stump, and was left there. They finally all disappeared. So this one over on in the picnic area, still there, but that probably was more recent. But there was good pine all through this region, and they began to come up here. They'd come with one ox team. A man will get together an ox team and a crew of 12 or 14 men and come up here and cut pine, build a little camp and cut pine, and then in the spring they'd drive their pine to Bangor.
Mm-hmm.
And
they put their own mark on it, like a brand?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, about 1860. I think 1860 was the last all pine drive down the east branch of the Penobscot.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they began to get spruce, and they got to be bigger operations. And then one camp and with perhaps 40 men and 16 or 18 horses. And while in the early camps, they'd have one ox team of six or eight oxen.
Did somebody stand to do well? He brought a team in like that and 12 men. I mean, is this, you make a pretty good living this way?
Well, the men who actually cut the lumber, there were some potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
It depends so much on the weather, how much it cost them to drive it, you know. Mm-hmm. If they had a good drive and they had a good stand of pine to cut, not too far from the water, they'd do pretty well. Some years they'd do very well. And then some years they'd go broke.
Yeah, just like any other crop.
Yes.
Yeah. How did the museum itself start?
Well, with Caleb Scribner, he was younger than I am. My high school days, he was one of the small boys. But coming back here, he's interested in everything in the woods. He worked as a fire warden and a game warden and surveyor, most any job in the woods. And he was for many years the chief warden of this district.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really a historian. He knew the history of every house and town, and he could tell you who built it and who lived in it. And he had collected a few items, anything he'd pick up, he'd beg it, things from people, like the, well, there was a surveyor, an engineer here. He had a compass that was used surveying the Rustic Road.
Mm-hmm.
And he, this Caleb, he says that to Hal Robinson, the man, he says that Hal gave him this compass. Well, Hal was ran through his what property he had inherited and so on, and everything he had went over to the finally to his stepson, and he said that Hal Robinson didn't give him that compass, and he tried to get it back, but he couldn't find it. And after Caleb died, his wife gave it to me on the condition that I wouldn't tell where I got it. And so we have that in the museum. But he was collecting things like that. He had half a dozen or more big, wide pine boards that had been sawed in the up and down mill. And
just as a hobby.
Yes. And he was always going to write the history of the town and have this collection, a historical museum of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back here, I was interested in history of the town and so on, and so I went along with him. And but he was a procrastinator and always putting things off, and when I found what his idea of a museum was, he was going to have all the old cradles and sewing machines and hay rakes and everything of that, farm tools and household equipment, and I finally decided that I couldn't see my way through that. We'd get a big collection of old junk and that wouldn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I proposed we limited to a lumberman museum, and he didn't go for that, but I went ahead with it, and he followed along, and never admitting that it was going to be a lumberman museum, but he didn't have anything much to do with it especially after we set it up in the back room of the library, and when we outgrew that, we built up an organization and founded the Lumberman's Museum and built a building up on the Shin Pond Road there.
Mm-hmm.
And he remained as a member of the corporation and so on, but he never had anything to do with the museum up there.
Do you remember any real characters in your early days here that might be of interest? People that, I don't know, maybe brought a smile to you in your life?
Oh, yes,
like this.
Lots of them. But I don't know. Lawyer here, the first lawyer, was Squire Benjamin. He was a graduate of Bowdoin, he was a really learned man. And he had a son who went to the Maine State College and studied engineering, and he became one of the leading mechanical engineers of the country. And he was at Purdue, head of the department at Purdue, and he was a good deal of an artist, and he wrote some very nice little books, poetry and so on, and we have quite a good many of his watercolors in the museum. Mm-hmm. And he wrote, we got hold of that, Mrs. Rogers has it somewhere, mm-hmm. a book he wrote about the times here, war times, Civil War. And he tells a lot of stories there, but he disguises the names, so. He doesn't know what he wants to say. I'm suing him, I suppose, for libel. But it's he wrote it very good. And